This mortal coil.
What do Dame Judi Dench, Bonnie Raitt, and the two people you're about to meet have in common? They're all Quakers, or members of the Society of Friends. It's a Christian-based religion which began around the 1650s in England. You might know that the Quakers are renowned pacifists and that rather than attend sermons, they go to meetings. Tonight you're going to learn more about what Quakerism is all about with my next two guests. Wiese Scheringer is here in studio. Wiese first came to Australia in 1972 as a migrant from the Netherlands and has been involved with the Quaker community in Sydney for 35 years. Hi, Wiese. Welcome.
Good evening, Susanna.
I've also got David O'Halloran with me. David is joining us from Hobart, which is actually the birthplace of Quakerism in Australia. David became a Quaker more than 40 years ago after being brought up in the Catholic faith. Hello, David. Welcome.
Hello, Suzanne. Thank you for having me.
And look, if you've got questions about what it means to be a Quaker, you might like to send them through on the SMS 0467 922 702, the phone number 1300 800 222. Now, David, I understand that Quaker history begins back in England in the 1650s. Tell us a bit about the story.
Sure. Well, the 1650s were an interesting time, and a bit like 2024, there was a King Charles on the throne, although they had just chopped off his head at that stage. Europe was coming out of the 30-year war, so the world felt like it was going to hell in a handbasket, not too dissimilar from now. And a chap called George Fox had an insight that he was fairly disillusioned with the religious authorities. We think about that time, it wasn't sort of the military industrial complex, it was the military church complex. He didn't think that was a particularly good idea. And he effectively democratized mysticism. He thought that people could have a direct relationship with God without any need for priests or formal structures to intervene. And he coined a concept of the inner light. And his teachings offered a fairly peaceful, direct path to spirituality at a time when the continent was ravaged by war and division.
Where did the term Quaker come from, do you know, David?
Well, that's a good thing. So we were originally called the Children of the Light, and then they settled on the Society of Friends, and I'll come back to that in a moment. The term was actually used as an insult originally. A judge decided that these people quake all the time, and we adopted it as our a badge of honour.
Interesting. All right, so take us back to the Religious Society of Friends then and the importance of that official title.
So the choice of the word friends is important because there's a scene from The Last Supper where Jesus talks about people who try to live his life are his friends. And that's where the sense of friends comes from. In other words, we're mates of Jesus.
Now, I know George Fox is often referred to as the first Quaker. I know his wife, Margaret Fell, was also credited as being more of the organiser between Quakerism or behind it. Tell us about Margaret.
Sure. So George and Margaret, they met in the 1650s, and she became a central figure in Quakerism. You were right. She was kind of the organisational brains behind the movement. She was a wealthy woman, and her home in Lancashire effectively became the movement, if we call it that, the movement's headquarters. She was a formidable advocate for women's rights, and participation in religious leadership. Women in Quakers have always had leadership roles from the beginning, which for some churches is still radical in 2024. Imagine how radical that was in the 1650s.
Is it right, though, David? I was reading that even though there were leadership roles for women, part of that was because men and women did worship separately in the beginning?
Sometimes, yes. In some meetings, there were men's meetings and women's meetings. Yes, that's true.
And tell us a bit too, David, about religious persecution. When the Quakers popped up, and you mentioned that judges were often saying that they were quaking, and there was a lot of religious persecution, obviously, back in the day. Were the Quakers subject to some of that?
Well, you know, in England, Quakers suffered under laws that banned their meetings and punished them for non-attendance at Anglican services. Back in those days, people were obliged to pay tithes to the church. Now, Quakers thought, well, that wasn't actually much chop. They also refused to swear oaths, and we still do, and they had reasonably radical social practices. Like these people were, you know, mad, bad, and dangerous to know as far as the established church was concerned. They would quite happily go into a church when a minister was preaching and call out the hypocrisy. So the church didn't like that. And again, think of the church as being the equivalent of these days billionaires. They had friends in high places, and Quakers ended up in prison frequently.
And I understand, I was reading too earlier, David, that partly because of that history, that one of the issues that Quakers are actually quite passionate about is today is arguing for better conditions for people who are in prison.
Yes, prison reform has been a central concern for Quakers for a very long time. And a well-known Quaker reformist for prisons was Elizabeth Fry, who was a major influence on Carolyn Chisholm.
We're talking about Quakerism in this Mortal Coil on tonight's Nightlife. I've got David O'Halloran with me, a Quaker based in Hobart, and also Wheeze Scheringer, who is a Quaker based in Sydney, who's here with me in the ABC studio. Wheeze, tell me how you would describe the Quaker ethos. What's it all about in a nutshell?
It's a spiritual path, and it's our life's work to understand what it is to be a Quaker. And it's based on values. We call them testimonies. But first of all, it's based on seeing that of God in everyone. So a great commitment to equality. And that's not always easy, but it's our life's work to work on that. And to understand what it means to, and what Quakers sometimes call it, despises, simplicity, peace, integrity, community, equality, and sustainability of creation. And how one lives one life, how one lives one's life with those values, and understanding that we are followers of Jesus and following Jesus' commands. This is all not easy, and it's And for Quakers, it's not a matter of accepting a creed. We don't have a creed, but this is your life's work. And how you live your life evolves, how you deal with the stresses, with the good times, the bad times. You try and apply these principles.
So, Wes, maybe you could give us an example for your own life when faced with a particular challenge. How would you approach that with, a Quaker outlook? How would you apply that to situations in your life?
That to try and be understanding of people who are different from the way I am, who might have different opinions, that I can still see the light of God in them. And also, say, in the prison work, I haven't worked in prisons myself, but I've been a social worker my whole life, to see that of God in other people and to see their potential. And that's also with prison work, there is potential in people. There is that of God, and it's for us to recognize that and to be respectful of that.
Mm. Now, Wes, you were brought up a Mennonite. What? Just give us a quick description of that, and then tell me how you ended up moving to becoming a Quaker.
My family, my ancestors in the north of the Netherlands have, as far as I know, always been Mennonites. That was a religion of the Reformation in Europe, in mainland Europe, in the 1500s. And there was a Catholic priest by the name of Menno Simons who brought together an Anabaptist tradition of people who would only accept adult baptism and not have a strong belief in sin. There was no need for babies to be christened because there was no sin to be washed away. And they were very turbulent times, the same like in the mid-1600s when George Fox drew together disparate people, and so did Menno Simons. And that's where the name the Mennonites come from.
And so your conversion to Quakerism, how did that happen?
Well, not a conversion. I came as a migrant to Australia, and there was only a very small group of Mennonites here. And they were outside of Sydney. I knew about the Quakers. The Mennonites are also pacifists. And over, you know, Quakers and Mennonites sometimes work together. So I knew about Quakers. And at the Palm Sunday rallies, I used to see the Quakers. I used to go with a group of friends, especially against nuclear armaments in those days in the 80s. And there were these sensible women with a good old banner. And I thought, I like those women. They've got sensible haircuts. They've got very sensible shoes, and they're there, and they're carrying the banner. I think, you know, one day I'll join them, and that's what happened. When my daughter was young, I felt that I wanted her to grow up in a faith community, and that's when I made a move to seek out the Quakers, and I found my tribe, I found my people.
So the Quakers have a method for conducting meetings and making decisions. Tell us about going to a meeting. What happens at a meeting?
We sit in a circle. There's no head table. There's no altar. We sit in a circle where everybody is equal. And in the middle, when you go to a Quaker meeting, there's a small table with a plant or some fresh flowers, a Bible and some Quaker readings, some Quaker books. And we sit in silence and we try and clear our mind. It's more a meditative practice as well, to clear our mind. And I don't have a mantra, but I often start by thinking, what does the Lord require of me? And then I think on the way home, I should pick up some milk at Woolies. That's not what the Lord requires of me. And so you try and still yourself and to center down. Then sometimes people will speak, but it's often a deep silence. When you're with 20 people, or soon when we have our annual gathering in person again in Adelaide in July, we might have 150 people sitting together in silence. That's very powerful. And then together, and you know that everybody's sitting in silence, they might also thinking about what they should pick up at Woolies on the way home, but we all attempt to be in touch with our spiritual path. Sometimes people will speak, they will stand up and speak something biblical or something from what's happened in their life that week, something spiritual, sometimes very practical, might only go for a minute, 2 or 3 minutes, they sit down again. It's not a debate, it's not a discussion. Somebody else might stand up and continue the theme. Sometimes 5 or 6 people speak, and that's a lot. I think 2 or 3 is enough. And sometimes when people speak, I think, I don't know what that is about. This was not meant for me, and that's fine, because people speak from their own experience, and it's not a sermon to be accepted.
So, if it's more less about speaking, although that happens sometimes, and more about sitting there and really thinking about what it is that you think God wants from you, why come together to do that rather than do that in your own home?
Yes, you can do it by yourself as well, but I find that coming together and being with 20 people doing this together, for me, works much better. At home, you're always distracted. But we found during COVID, we all had meetings for worship online. And how do you have a Zoom meeting with 20 people who are all sitting in silence at home? But we learned how to do that. And in my meeting at Warunga, we still often have 2, 3, 4, 5 people online who at home join us. And they want to be online, so they know that there are other people doing the same thing. And I think it focuses, it strengthened, it strengthens what I am going through, what I am trying to discern for my life.
You're on Nightlife. It's This Mortal Coil on a Sunday night. Suzanne Hill with you and my guest tonight to talk about being Quakers and share some of their religion with us. David O'Halloran, who's a Quaker based in Hobart, and Wiese Scheringer, who is a Quaker based in Sydney. What about you, David? You weren't brought up a Quaker either, were you?
No, my family were Catholic. But I went to an ecumenical school in high school, so I knew about Quakers. I don't know when, but I've always known about Quakers. But when I moved to Hobart, there was the meeting house is not far from where I was living, and I thought, I'm going to go along to that. And I haven't left.
So what was it about that first experience, David? Because I guess to a lot of people who might be used to a church service where you've got a minister or a priest in charge and there's music, there's sermons, to go along and see that kind of very silent experience. Mm. What was it about that, David, that made you think, this is for me?
It felt like diving into something refreshing and warm and right. And difficult to describe. I mean, you know, the discussion of having 30 or 40 people sitting around in silence, you can try to describe that in words, but it's something that you experience. And so sometimes we would have what we would call a very gathered meeting. And still 40 people sitting around in silence, but there's something intuitively different about the feel of that meeting that tells you that it was deeply gathered. I cannot describe to you exactly how you know that, but it's often a shared experience.
So, David, from that initial birth of Quakerism in England, how did it take hold in other parts of the world?
Well, because Quakers were persecuted, they chose to emigrate, and originally they chose to emigrate to North America, and they established colonies that practice religious tolerance, like Pennsylvania. So the original founder of Pennsylvania, William Penn, was a Quaker, and it's no accident that Pennsylvania was seen as the birthplace of democracy in the United States, because they were strongly influenced by Quaker values of equality and justice.
And freedom of religion too, am I right, David?
Absolutely. So Pennsylvania is sort of more famous now for other groups like the Amish and the Mennonites and so forth. They all came to Pennsylvania because they had guaranteed religious freedom.
Mm-hmm. So how and when did Quakerism arrive in Australia?
So Quakerism came to Australia in about the 1830s, and I should have looked this up before this, two English people, Backhouse and Walker, were sent to the colony to inquire about the health and well-being of the convicts and the Aboriginal people. And they stayed.
And there's a couple of those values that I think we're seeing then that are very much part of the Quaker ethos today, caring about Indigenous Australians, caring about people who are in prison. And so
Absolutely.
Does that mean that David, that there is a larger population in Hobart than in other parts of Australia?
Well, no, not the most number of Quakers is in Sydney, because it's the largest city in the country. Sorry, Melbourne, but the number of Quakers in Tasmania is disproportionately bigger than other states. And that's also because we have the Friends School in Hobart, so it's a Quaker school. Not that that many Quakers go to the school, we also have the Cadbury factory down here, so there was a lot of establishment of Quakers. Cadbury's was a Quaker business.
And am I right in thinking sanatorium with the oats?
No, that's no. Seventh-day Adventist.
Ah, okay. Mm. All right. I'm very sorry. I've got myself
that's all
confused
right.
there. David, I know that Quakers are known for being pacifists. What has that meant during times of conflict?
Well, it's interesting. Pacifism, people mistake pacifism for passivity, and that's not the same thing. Pacifism requires you to be quite active, looking for a pathway towards peace. That means seeing the divine in every person. And often wars and conflict will happen when we fail to recognize the divine in each other. The current conflicts happening in, say, the Middle East and Ukraine and in the Congo, you would have to suggest that they're not seeing the divine in each other.
But David, what role did Quakers play then, for example, in Australia in the two world wars?
Quakers were generally conscientious objectors, although many Quakers would do practical things like join the ambulance service or help in any way they could, but not be involved in active conflict. But the decision to become a soldier or not become a soldier in the wars is a personal choice. Like everything in Quakerism, it is how you decide you're going to live your life.
And are you aware then,
some
David,
Quakers did join.
Some did.
Did join the army, yeah.
And so what does that mean today, David?
In what sense?
Well, with this commitment to pacifism, I mean, how does that play out in your life?
I think how you live your life is, I think it's Jodie Williams, who was the Ban Landmine Campaign Nobel Peace Prize winner, said, anyone can change the world. You just have to follow your passion and keep showing up. And I think for Quakers, it's slightly different in that anyone can change the world. We try to listen to that inner light or that inner spirit or what God tells you to do, and then follow and then keep turning up and keep on turning up again and again and again. So if your path is, the grand movements of the world, well, that's great, but you can waste an awful lot of your life waiting to be called for some great mission to change the world when your part in history may be something much more prosaic.
Mm. Well, David, do you see where your own is?
Pardon?
Do you see where your own part in history is?
Try to find a need and try to do my best. I think that if you can't, there are so many things happening in the world. If you can't find some way to try to make the world a better place, then I'd say you are singularly lacking in imagination. There's no shortage of things for anyone to look around and say, I think I could make this better.
Mm. My guests are David O'Halloran, a Quaker based in Hobart, and Wiese Scheringer, a Quaker based in Sydney, who's here in the studio with me. Wiese, do you find there are many young people who are becoming Quakers or are Quakers in Australia today?
No, not many, and that's a problem. Because there are a lot of spiritual seekers out there, and there are young people in their 20s, 30s who come to a Quaker meeting, but they are kind of church shopping in a way. They're looking for a spiritual home. And some come back, others don't. And also when they come to a meeting, a Quaker meeting, and the majority of the people there are the age of their grandparents, there's not a community of younger people. So we'd love to have more younger people coming and to be part of our community and to contribute to our community. And we hope that also especially with COVID, more people became seekers. And in our meetings, we've had more people coming along, but also in my meeting, we've had some retirees who actually now have time to think, you know, I was brought up a Catholic, an Anglican, or we used to go to the Baptist church, but we haven't been for decades. I know I've heard about these Quakers, I've read about them, and now also people go online. So by the time they come to a meeting for worship, they're reasonably well informed about what we are, who we are. But it's very important to have conversations with the newcomers and ask them what are they looking for and how can we meet that.
And Wes, are Quakers actively seeking out their new recruits, if you will?
No, we don't go out evangelizing. But we do have open days. We do things to try and attract people. And we hope that people, when they Google, they find our website, Quakers Australia, and have a good look at our website and understand what we are about. And also there are more than 100 meetings and worshipping groups. We call them small groups around Australia. So there are always, even if you live somewhere remotely, it's not too far away, that there is a small group of 3, 4, 5 Quakers who come together, say, once a month and sit in silence together.
Mm. Their numbers in Australia are actually fairly small, aren't they? Something like, what, 1,500 people?
Yeah, about 1,500, yes. Yeah.
David, the biggest community, one of them, is actually in Kenya. How did that come to be?
Well, the Australian tradition is very much what we call the unprogrammed type. So the types of meeting we've been describing, which is where we sit in silence, that's not the only type of Quakerism. So within, say, United States, there's a lot more diversity of practice, and they might have what they call semi-programmed or even programmed meetings where there might be programmed things happening that might look a little bit more like people's traditional understanding of a church experience. Now, in the Australian tradition, evangelism is just not something we do, but again, some of the American communities are much more comfortable with evangelism, and they were particularly successful in Africa, around Kenya, Burundi, and Uganda. So the largest number of Quakers in the world is actually in Kenya. And that's partly also because our approach to worship and also our strong commitment to equality seem to resonate with the culture it found itself in. Quakerism tends to adapt to where it finds itself. And that was immensely attractive in Kenya.
Well, David Wes, thank you so much for being on Nightlife tonight, giving us a bit of the history and explaining, well, what it is like to be a Quaker in Australia today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
On ABC Radio and on the ABC Listen app, this is Suzanne Hill.